One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Be Here for a While. This is my first time ever recording on a Sunday night. Normally, I'm like hungover and regretting all my bad decisions, but I feel responsible right now. I'm doing like a work thing. I just always want to thank you guys, as always, for listening and rating my podcast 5 stars and leaving reviews and sending me emails. I respond to every email, so keep emailing me whatever you want to talk about. info@rachelobriancomedy.com. I love you guys. I have a really, really exciting guest today. It's kind of a different thing. He's not a comedian. He's not an actor. But he's a very successful entrepreneur. He started a brand called FabFitFun. He's the CEO, co-founder of it? Or co-CEO, co-founder. Yeah, Michael Brockheim. Did I say it right?
Brockheim?
Close enough. Okay, yeah. Well, I should have probably asked you that beforehand.
We'll roll with it.
Brockheim?
Yeah,
whatever. Nailed it. I mean, listen, I can re-edit it and say it. It's fine. Thank you for doing this.
I think we should keep it all in then.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me. It's a real honor to be on the show.
Is it an honor?
Yeah.
I'm keeping you up late on a Sunday night.
Well,
you have a very busy schedule.
I never thought I was funny enough to make it into a comedy podcast. So.
Well, no one said you were funny. I just said you were interesting.
Or I could be made fun of. One or the other.
You are kind of funny, actually.
TBD.
You are funny.
Thank you.
I think you are.
I'm going to try to be on my game tonight.
You don't have to be.
Okay.
You just have to like drop some like cool knowledge about what you do.
I try to do that.
Or you just do whatever you want. So you started a company called FabFitFun. For my listeners that don't know what that is, I feel like if half of you watch Vanderpump Rules and half of you have seen the posts about FabFitFun. Well, no, but Vanderpump Rules people post about it.
My yeah, 100%.
Do. Yeah. Well, I don't really talk about Bachelorette on there.
Oh.
Do you even know who posts about your brand?
Of course I do.
Really?
Yeah, the Vanderpump Rules girls.
Name one of their names.
Lisa Vanderpump.
Oh, you took the easiest. She's not really on. I mean, she is on the show, but like.
I played a win. Really.
That was good.
Thank you.
You really can't even name one of their names.
This Stassi. Is okay.
Oh, there you go. That's an easy one to remember. Probably because I've also said her name in front of you and you just heard it recently.
Well, that's how we met.
Yeah, that's true. I went to one of your events. It was very fun. But then I forgot I'd met you. Who knows? Then we emailed about comedy. Whatever. That's all I talk about. So how did you start FabFitFun?
It's an interesting question. I started with two of my two co-founders. One of my co-founders is actually my brother. Mm-hmm. He's also my co-CEO. Mm-hmm. And the other is Katie Kitchens. We should have at least one woman who knows what we're doing around us.
Yeah, that is kind of funny that you run, it's a female brand, but it's 2 out of 3 are male CEOs.
Two out of three, but we're mind meld, so we're almost one person.
Okay, fair
and
enough.
And Katie does so much that, you know, we'll give her the other 50%.
Okay. What made you feel qualified to run like a female sort of brand?
I'm not sure I am qualified, but.
See, that was funny.
Yeah, you
look at you. You're in there.
You
yeah.
have to turn
you're,
things, right?
You're warming up.
Yeah, I'm getting there. It was truly a sort of happy accident. I mean, mm-hmm. my all of us sort of came at this from a different perspective, but my personal journey started doing political new media consulting.
Mm-hmm.
And then
so how did that happen? How old were you?
I was 22 years old. I was in college and
you were already working.
It was sort of accidental too. One of my best friends was doing some consulting work and asked me to help him out, and mm-hmm. one thing led to another. We both didn't show up to our jobs a few months later that we had accepted. And
oh, really? So it was like the tail end of college, I guess, 22
yeah.
would be.
Yeah, it was exactly. It was basically senior spring.
Were you studying like tech, social media stuff in college?
No. I was, the word social was in it. It was called social studies.
Social studies? That was something we did in grade school, though.
Yeah, I didn't mean
the same thing.
I joke that it meets after recess and before lunch.
Okay.
And you have to pass a states and capitals test in order to graduate.
Was that really what it was called in college?
It was called social studies. It's.
But it involved the internet?
It didn't involve the internet. It's a sort of catch-all major. Mm-hmm. I went to Harvard, so it was called, I guess, a concentration.
So you took the easiest major at Harvard.
It might
as well have been home ec.
I'm going to stand up for all of the social studies majors out there with me. It was an honors only major, so you had to apply. It was thought of as a very difficult
honors
major.
So not only are you in Harvard, but you're also in the honors program there?
It's an honors only major in the sense that you're required to write an honors thesis. And
you couldn't just do Harvard? You had to go be in the honors program? You're just like a show off.
It wasn't that special. So
it sounds like it.
No.
Harvard alone is special, let alone being in the honors. I was proud that I was at the honors at University of Oregon.
That's a big deal.
It wasn't. It was a very easy school to be good at.
Well, I think probably the hardest thing about Harvard is getting in.
So I never applied. I was like, that seems like too much work.
It was on the Common app.
On the Common?
Yeah, what? It's just a checkbox.
What do you mean?
You could have applied very easily.
I don't know what you mean by that. There's an app to apply for college?
So there's a. I don't know what they do.
There wasn't when I went to college.
So when I went to
college.
And
I'm younger than you.
Well, there was this thing called the Common Application.
Okay.
And not all schools were on it, but a lot of them were. And Harvard was one of them. So you could just check a box and it sent your app there. And there's maybe one or two supplemental things.
So you made all your applications like really fancy. Because I would just do like a half-ass one for like a state school, like, ugh, and then like a nice one for. So you just made like one really good one, and you just kind of.
No, so I didn't end up applying a lot of places, but the ones I did.
Because you figured you were going to get into Harvard.
Well, I got in early, so.
What does that mean? You're just bragging now.
No, they just have an earlier deadline that you can apply to, and then they put your sort of anxiety to rest.
So you got in. Were your parents really proud of you?
They were. They were very proud.
Did you have the type of parents that if you wouldn't have gotten into Harvard, they would have been like, ugh, my son, he's a loser.
No, not at all. They would have been proud of me, I think, no matter what. I guess in that sense, I'm sort of like a true millennial where my parents thought everything I did was amazing.
You get an award for everything?
I got a lot, yeah. A lot of stickers.
Okay, so you apply to Harvard, you get in early, and then you go into the honors program.
It was social studies.
Okay, social studies.
Real basic.
Yeah, but you okay? Did the honors program like lead into any other majors, or was it just that one?
No, there were other honor. There were other majors that you had to write a thesis for.
Anything like cool, like chemical.
I focused on.
Why was such an easy sounding major?
There were. Let's be totally clear. There are way, way harder majors at Harvard.
Oh, I know.
Like way harder. Like
I assume math.
Math and applied math and computer science and chemistry and mechanical engineering.
Yeah. So like most of them.
But, yeah, exactly. This is in this amongst the social sciences.
Uh-huh.
Social studies was sort of like your paint your own journey sort of major, where between like. Let's just say like psychology and political science and economics and philosophy and history and sort of these areas, you sort of carve out your own journey and figure out, you know, what you wanted to do within that. And so I ended up focusing a lot on sort of a combination of economics and psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up doing wrote my thesis about sort of how people felt about products that talked about certain labor standards or talked about, you know, fair trade or environmental standards mm-hmm. versus not. Give a shout out to the professor I worked with then. It was Michael Hiscox.
What's up, Michael?
Yeah, what's up, Michael?
I bet he's listening to this.
This is very
informational on my podcast. This is professors at Harvard definitely listen to my podcast.
He's one of the foremost trade political economists in the world. So
he's
not listening.
He's probably learning something.
I think he's working now in the Australian government. He's from Australia, so
good for him.
Advising the administration there on trade politics. But
that's cool.
Yeah, so we what we did was we created basically some fake brands that didn't mm-hmm. exist and put different products that we made up on eBay. We did in fact make them because we wanted to.
What kind of products were they?
Just we did coffee and we did t-shirts and things like that. And mm-hmm. the experiment was basically put up one, you know, put up the same product, but that differed in just describing sort of the social goods attributes.
Okay.
So this product was made with fair labor standards, or this product was made with, you know, these environmental conditions. And then we'd see if we listed those auctions simultaneously, where the descriptions only differed in that regard,
okay,
whether there was different bidding behavior amongst consumers in there. I know this is exactly what you're. No, I love it.
No, no, they want to know how to be successful. This is good. I do this all the time.
So, I don't know if this research is the answer to that question, but it worked.
Maybe some of them are in college.
It was part of my journey.
Yeah, it's part of your journey. So did you know? Okay. What did you want to be when you were a kid? That's the first question. Second question was, once you were studying, when you were doing all this stuff in college, what did you think you were going to do with that?
Oh, wow. What did I want to do when I was a kid? What did I want to be when I would grow up when I was a kid? I guess that's a question.
Yeah, I probably didn't say it correctly.
Yeah, it's all good.
I'm tired.
I'm precise.
Yeah. I'm tired and I'm sober, which is like, well, that's too much.
We can help. There's, you know, where we go. So I want to be a Laker player. Want to be,
you
want to
be a basketball player?
I want to play basketball for the Lakers. Aw,
that's adorable.
Yeah. It was.
Were you a good basketball? Were you an athlete?
I, in my little small corner of the world, I could say that I was an athlete, but.
You were pretty good?
No, just like, amongst the not so great kids. I mean, I played varsity basketball in the end.
Did you go to a special needs school? No, or what do you mean? What was the not so great kids?
I peaked in JV.
Okay.
Me and my brother actually our co-winning tandem peaked when I was in athletics, peaked when I was in 10th grade. He was in 11th grade. And we were co-MVPs actually.
Really?
Of the JV Buckley basketball
team. That's adorable.
Yeah, it was really great.
So you wanted
I think
to
that
be...
it was a feel-good award for me. He really deserved it.
Was he a better athlete than you?
He's not a better athlete, but he's a better basketball player, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you wanted to play in the NBA.
I wanted to play in the NBA.
And then when did you realize, like, maybe that's not happening?
I think by like sixth grade, fifth grade.
That's good, being honest with yourself. Yeah.
I think it was like,
you weren't like in high school, like this is probably still going to happen for me.
I noticed that there were players that were way better and
yeah.
And my comparative advantage was
also
like math.
6'10" and black, you weren't.
No.
Yeah.
I was actually really short growing up too.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're not short now.
No, I mean, I had a big growth spurt later. I think it's helpful to be short when you're younger.
I think it's helpful to not be the like best. Like I think it's helpful not to peak when you're younger.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then
that's my version of it. Yeah. I feel like if you're like really
then you don't
tall,
have to develop
like
a personality,
looking,
and then you just are a jerk when you're older. Yeah.
I mean, you could, but I mean, there's tall people out there who are great too.
Well,
so
I know, but I talk about this a lot on my podcast. I was a monster as a child. I was hideous, and so like that was great for me because I got to have a personality. I wouldn't be doing comedy, you know.
Well, you've really blossomed.
Thank you. I know. Okay. So then what did you realize you wanted to do? Like you went to Harvard to study social studies.
It's just a big jump
from doing political stuff too.
So I can walk you through. So
okay.
I was always interested in media,
mm-hmm.
And journalism and writing.
Did you ever want to be in front of the camera?
No. I think the idea of like telling stories was interesting and, and engaging with an audience, but for me it was always about writing actually.
Mm-hmm.
I was the editor of my high school newspaper. I was actually the co-editorial chair of the Harvard Crimson, so
cool.
Working on the opinion stuff. And when I graduated, started this consulting thing with my friend. I had a background doing like some online stuff, and mm-hmm. So we were sort of doing strategy in that world. And after, we started a practice, we did a bunch of different campaigns, and I wanted to be back in LA. Mm-hmm. I was in New York and Boston at the time. And when I'd meet with different people in LA, it was a different town with a different focus. So
yeah.
They'd see.
Wait, so, but when you were at Harvard, you were doing political strategy first?
Yeah, it was senior year, and then through the next, about year and a half or so.
Who was that for?
We had a lot of different clients. We worked with Rudy Giuliani when he was running for president.
That's cool.
How
did you meet Rudy? And is Rudy cool?
So my friend and one of the original co-founders of sort of the company, and actually, early co-founder at FabFitFun, no longer with the company, but
mm-hmm.
One of my best friends in the world, Adam Katz, he had met an advisor to Rudy Giuliani.
Okay.
Throwing a conference at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And we became, and so he sort of, you know, spotted this opportunity, and
mm-hmm.
we did the political things. And then when I wanted to be back in LA, someone told me politics is Hollywood for ugly people.
I like that.
Yeah, if you can do this stuff for politicians, and then you can do this stuff for celebrities and entertainment folks. And then that's how...
And then you wanted to get back to LA, so you were like...
I started spending more time here, and, mm-hmm. and the first person I got introduced to in this world was, you know, someone, actually, some of your listeners might be familiar with, is Roger Berman and Rachel Zoe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing husband and wife tandem.
Yeah. How did you meet him or her? Him first?
I was introduced through a mutual friend.
Okay.
Yes, through a mutual friend, and Rachel was just becoming famous at the time. She... had her reality show,
mm-hmm.
the Rachel Zoe Project,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to figure out what they wanted to do online. So we were brainstorming different things, and we came up with this sort of online fashion newsletter blog, which became the Zoe Report.
So did you have to know a lot about fashion to do that, or was it just sort of like
you're just
good at marketing?
No, I was more like the sort of tech and marketing and mm-hmm. sort of a little bit of the business, you know,
okay.
and working. Oddly enough, like the things you learn in doing building political websites ended up translating really well to entertainment folks wanting to build their audiences, because we knew all about sort of acquiring email addresses and sort of the marketing behind that.
What does that mean? So like so then when you send out a newsletter to people, like you have acquiring email addresses mean?
So acquiring email addresses, just getting people to sign up for your newsletter.
Oh, okay.
And in politics, you did that because you wanted to then email these people about your campaign and, you know, why they should vote for you and why they should donate to you.
Mm-hmm.
But this first step was always get the email address. And, you know, today that's expanded. Now it's, you sort of want to get a follower in whatever way, you know, whether that's a Instagram follower or, mm-hmm. or a Facebook like or a Twitter follower or an email address or a podcast subscriber
mm-hmm.
or, you know, any number of the ways that we... Or Snapchat, you know,
yeah.
I don't know, friend. I don't know what it's called.
Follower?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Snapper. Fellow snapper.
I don't know. Yeah.
so that we became really adept at sort of creating personality-driven campaigns and mm-hmm. things like that to build email lists. And we did, you know, we worked on that. We got Rachel Zoe's project off the ground, the Zoe Report.
Mm-hmm.
That did really well, and we got introduced.
So you were one of the first people that started Zoe Report with her.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was exciting. And that ended up sort of giving us a whole new set of clients. We were working with different people in entertainment and Hollywood and some other brands like Tumblr and Pop Sugar. And,
mm-hmm.
And at some point, we wanted to try our own version of what we had done, and that was sort of the earliest days of FabFitFun.
So, okay. Well, so when you were doing, because Rachel Zoe has like a box thing now too. Were you doing that with her? Or was it just like when she was doing the box?
The box came later. So they recently, more recently launched their box. And we're still, very close friends and even, you know, shareholders. So we helped advise them on getting their
product off the ground too. So then how did you come up with FabFitFun? Based on just a fashion blog and political whatever you had in the...
So it's... You know, there are a lot of different sort of people at the genesis of FabFitFun. Mm-hmm. It was, and actually the personality behind it initially was Juliana Rancic. So
okay.
She was our launch partner, and the initial branding and sort of ethos of the site was driven by her lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea was we had sort of seen what we could do when we built the Zoe Report. Why don't we do our own internal project within this sort of consulting firm and agency? And we launched the Zoe Report. I mean, sorry, and FabFitFun.
So, she was just someone you attached to. You'd already come up with the concept, right?
We were in a lot of conversations with a lot of people, so we knew uh-huh. we wanted to build media sites.
Yeah.
But so this was when we were talking to her. You know, we were fleshing out the ideas
mm-hmm.
that would fit with her personality, and there's a long list of six or seven other folks who were sort of in these conversations.
I just don't. I just want to know, like, how you came up with the concept of, like, okay, people are gonna subscribe and receive a box of products.
So that was 3 years after the beginning of FabFitFun. So FabFitFun initially was not.
Oh, it wasn't that.
No.
What was it initially?
It was just a newsletter. It was a newsletter. Then it evolved into a website, built a social media following, I actually went and focused elsewhere. I went to grad school. My brother ran FabFitFun, you know, on his own for a number of years, and we were playing with different ideas in e-commerce.
Were you in honors at grad school too?
I was not. I was a very bad grad student.
Okay.
I was finally
you're normal.
I actually ended up dropping out of half of my degree.
What?
Yes.
You dropped out? You didn't even graduate?
I finished one of two degrees.
It's like you're a rebel.
Yeah.
Do you have tattoos?
Something like that.
Okay, so you drop out of grad school and
we launched we'd been sort of toying with these different ideas around the box, mm-hmm. and different e-commerce models that we could attach to FabFitFun. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, at different points we sort of circled on this idea of a box, and then credit to my brother who sort of planted the flag and said, you know, we're going to do this thing.
Uh-huh.
And in March,
Were there other boxes already out there?
There was Birchbox. Uh-huh. There was, Ipsy was around. There was another thing called Pop Sugar Must Haves. So there's, mm-hmm. there's a number of, you know, I think we don't even think what we were launching was really the box. It was more uh-huh. like the entire sort of thought behind a membership program that,
okay.
that would evolve. And even today, you know, we really think about this as more than a box.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there were a lot of subscription e-commerce things, mm-hmm. for sure. And this was, you know, we thought we had our own sort of unique angle into it where we could go and focus on full-size products across lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
Do it on a seasonal cadence rather than a monthly one. And we thought that gave us a lot of sort of interesting room to play and explore and do something, you know, different out there. And
mm-hmm.
So my brother got that off the ground in March of 2013. I graduated that June, kamikazed into the bar and failed the bar. And then,
you were going to go to law school?
Well, I'd finished law school.
Oh, why do you have to brag? Why so many things? you went to grad school
my grad school was law.
Was law school. Okay. I thought you were reading like
I started law school. Okay. I started business school and law school together.
That's still a lot, but yeah. Okay.
And, graduated in June. Was working on a different business project and working with FabFitFun and, you know, thinking about taking the bar. Ended up, you know, failing that, coming out of it, and then went all in with my brother on FabFitFun, with my mm-hmm. brother and Katie, who was
there.
Did
you guys have an office when you first started, or what was it?
We did. We had an office at 3rd Street.
Uh-huh.
Is here in Los Angeles. It's actually mm-hmm. just down the street from where our office is today. And we had started that office when we were doing the different early entertainment projects in LA. Mm-hmm.
Cool. How do you feel qualified to know so much about like female products and stuff? Or do you not picking them out? Like who picks out what goes in these boxes?
Katie heads up our merchandising team.
Okay.
So our merchandising team.
Do you weigh in on it at all though?
I'm not in a very heavy-handed way. I'll mm-hmm. share my opinion about what I think people might like, and I'll often ask, you know, different friends of mine for their opinions when things are coming up.
But you were explaining to me when I met you that like FabFitFun is like it's kind of more like you said it's more than just a box. It's like an overall sort of what's the word you use, like lifestyle or
yeah,
it's like a whole. So there's like a forum where people write in about how it's like changed their life and everything.
Yeah, so
explain all that because that stuff's really cool.
I'll tell you.
And you're very passionate about it.
I am. So the way we think about it is, you know, how do you personify what we're trying to do? If you think about some of the other subscriptions out there, let's say like something that's very beauty focused, when you get that, you might think this is like my makeup artist or like a beauty consultant.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a, you know, a box of clothes every month, you might think, oh, this is my stylist or someone who, you know, helps me get dressed.
Okay.
You know, you might get a snack box. It's like my nutritionist or something. Like, who is FabFitFun? Mm-hmm. We've always thought it's some version of like your best friend or your sister, because she's not thinking about just one aspect of you, but your mm-hmm. whole life.
That's cool.
So we have beauty products, fashion, fitness, wellness, home, tech, etc. And so when we think, what are we trying to do? We're trying to, you know, sort of inspire you to try new things, get a little bit out of your comfort zone each season.
Mm-hmm.
The mechanism that's sort of most obvious that we do that through is the box,
mm-hmm.
but we've more recently started building out, well, how else can we do it? How mm-hmm. else can we, you know, nudge people to just sort of keep growing? You know, I think in our society, we put an emphasis on growth and education, until you're 22. And then when mm-hmm. you graduate college, that sort of ends.
Yeah.
There's no real place to do that. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we think of FabFitFun as this sort of like, you know, trying to be the best version of yourself membership and mm-hmm. self-care sort of.
That's so cool.
Service. And so, so the best example of how that will continue to grow and how we've done it already is just a month ago, we launched what we call FabFitFun TV, which is a collection of some of the best workouts in the world. We partnered with some amazing studios, including Body by Simone, Physique 57.
Do you have to pay for this membership?
It's completely free with your FabFitFun box.
Oh, cool.
So if you are getting the box, you are a FabFitFun member. You get access to FabFitFun TV.
Every time we talk about this, I feel like I'm like being sold on something that's really going to change my life.
It's
it feels like a really healthy cult.
It's
but like not the bad kind where you like drink a juice and you all kill yourself. Like,
well, I think, you know, I think cult is a very strong word because we're very not judgy.
I like it.
We're
not,
you know, I think part of our ethos is not like there's a right way or a wrong way.
Yeah.
It's very sort of supportive.
Okay.
And you know, everyone's on a journey and helping them.
Well, that's how most cult leaders phrase it too. But yeah.
I don't know. I feel like cult leaders.
It's not like that.
Ultimately,
but it makes you feel good. Like I opened one of the boxes and I was like, I feel like someone just like bought me a present, even though I got it for myself. That like it just kind of like it was so exciting because you're not even because it's seasonal, you're not expecting it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess you technically are, but like when it comes, you're just like, whoa, like I don't know, and it's a surprise what's in there.
Yeah, it's a surprise. We do some spoilers to build the excitement, but overall, it's something, you know, where you sort of start of a new adventure. And I think the seasonal cadence is actually really, you know, important and part of what makes it special. It's one, you know, by being every 3 months and not monthly, there's a lot of anticipation that gets built up, and that you know is really an event for us when we ship
people
out a box.
People want what they have to wait for.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement being generated. And then I think the next thing about the season is there's a couple times a year where everyone, you know, very deliberately, or, you know, people tend to be more introspective. I think people maybe on their birthdays or on New Year's when you're making resolutions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the season is another time that you sort of have that effect where, you know, spring is here and you sort of, you know, what does spring bring? And you start, you know, thinking about yourself. And I think our box sort of punctuates that for our members, where it's really like a pronouncement, like spring is here. And then because we're so broad in our curation, and we really do think of these as stories and sort of catalysts for new ideas and new adventures.
What do you mean by stories?
We don't think of like if we put a, let me give you a good example, in our spring box, we have a roundy. It's a product, right? It's sort of like a round blanket.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
With like really beautiful patterns on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in some ways, you know, if you just sent that out, it's cool, I think. But realistically, there's so much to bring out of this specific. We partnered with a brand called Gypsy 05.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition.
I know what that is.
Yeah. So when we send out our roundy, one, there's like a companion magazine, and we'll show you, you know, 10 different ways to use it. You can use it like on a picnic, on a beach. You can use it as a decorative throw on your rug. You can use it to on your couch. You can use it to keep you warm at a concert. And we'll show those images and then go, you know, even another step beyond that, which is, who is Gypsy 05? And, you know, we'll show an entire adventure into sort of the supply chain, how these were made. And we have videos that we created that sort of catalog that. And then you think of the setting. These were actually made in India. So we actually did a story about India and the city, city that where the factories were located for the Gypsy Roundies. And so we push in that way. And then we, you know, 10 things you can do with your Gypsy Roundie in terms of like, you know, your picnic ideas and things like that. So there's actually some good studies that say, things don't make you happy, experiences do. And on first blush, you'd think, wow, that's a really bad point for FabFitFun.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're sending you a box of things.
Yeah.
We don't think that, we just don't think about it. We think the things are one of the best ways to sort of inspire experiences and mm-hmm. thoughts and feelings and emotions and discovery.
Because now you have a cool blanket to go to like picnics.
Yeah, and it just with. it gives you that little reminder. And yeah. in a way that a lot of times in our digital world, mm-hmm. we just have like sensory overload, notification overload, email overload. Mm-hmm. What do I read? Clickbait on BuzzFeed. Mm-hmm. Our box tends to cut through the noise because it's physical. And so our stories start with this physical touch point, and we think that's pretty unique.
That is cool. Yeah. What advice would you give to young entrepreneurs that want to come, that want to create a business like this?
Like this?
Young entrepreneurs.
I think
it doesn't have to be like this. It can be like anything.
I think you have to just embrace a little bit of the serendipity of where life is going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just completely unpredictable that I'd be doing what I'm doing in the position I am today.
Yeah.
There's no version of any future world that I could have imagined that included yeah. this. And I think it was, you know, how I got here was just sort of following my nose about one, you know, what was I good at?
Mm-hmm.
Where was I getting a response? You know, where was
good
I
advice,
seeing,
yeah.
seeing things happening? And then, and where was the opportunity? Where was sort of like, where was the overlap with, mm-hmm. With that and doing something valuable?
Well, I paused it because he got food. Maybe I won't even bother to like edit that out smoothly. So you believe in finding where there's opportunity to create value in the world?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think.
Everything that you wanted to do, you wanted to like somehow like move people or change things or shake things up.
Well, you want to have an impact. I think that's just a, you know, sort of. Pretty universal desire that you want to feel like you're doing something that's important.
Some people don't care about that. Some people just care about themselves. But
that's fair.
Yeah.
I'll just speak for myself then. I wanted to do something that I thought was
yeah.
like making a difference for people. And
I agree with you, but
and you know we've kept broadening and stretching what we're doing to really make sure that you know we are doing something valuable. We see just the stories of customers being you know so happy not just like. Happy in a sort of I got a great deal mm-hmm. you know I think that's we sort of that's the tip of the spear for us it's
yeah
you know, we draw people in with a lot of the sort of different marketing messages that we use and you know some of the influencers we work with many of whom are on your show
mm-hmm.
But you know what
because my friends are living like a really clean inspirational life I'm joking
well the you know but I think the experience that we're creating that sort of recentering each season and that sense of I'm still a work in progress. I still have new things to do and discover.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just super powerful. And then we create.
I like that work in progress thing.
And we create a community around it where our members are connecting with each other and supporting each other and they're telling us how important. This sort of little ritual that they've brought into their lives is to them. And so
can you give me a few examples of these stories that they have shared? You don't have to like say their names.
Yeah. As we're thinking of broadening the scope of the membership, we have the box, we have add-ons that you can add to your box. We have the Fab for Fun TV initiative. And for over a year now we have the Fab for Fun community, which is, a place where members can just connect with each other and the stories they're sharing there, it's all over the place. I mean, there's, you know, one of the top threads right now is who's dealing with anxiety
mm-hmm.
and the stories there, all, you know, all sorts of stories about anxiety, including even, members of our own team are in there too. And,
uh-huh.
and I think there's this, you know, and a lot in that why are they bringing it up and why, you know, FabFitFun and, you know, why is that something that's on our community? I think.
Because you're creating a community of people that can connect with each other.
Yeah. And I think there's this sort of happiness ideal and, you know, we try to say it's not like hedonist happiness. It's a more of a, like a deeper fulfillment happiness that we're trying to sort of promote. With the box,
mm-hmm.
And that idea that like learning and growing, is a path is sort of, I don't want to say like a noble path to happiness, but like a
mm-hmm.
you know some sort of virtuous path and
yeah, it's not like just collecting things and looking good. It's
Yeah, and our,
growing.
Yeah, and our members feel that energy around our brand, and I think that's why a topic like anxiety comes up, because it's you know, getting through that is part of sort of what, you know, they're battling with or to on their own journey.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I just asked you what advice you would give young entrepreneurs. What was the best advice you were ever given when you were starting these kind of companies? Did you ever have a mentor or something?
Yeah, I've had a ton of incredible mentors and advisors and friends and role models.
Besides Mike, the professor, Michael.
Michael Hiscox.
Yeah.
Professor Hiscox. There have been so many. I think in a lot of ways, the people I've learned the most from are honestly my business partners.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's Danny, my brother, who I learn a ton from all the time, and Katie, mm-hmm. My co-founder. We're always learning from each other, and more importantly, sort of learning, I think, more than anything, like perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
I think on any entrepreneurial adventure, there's going to be moments of doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I've certainly had my share, and I think, and I know my co-founders have as well, and I think the thing that we've really taught each other is how to bring the other up, mm-hmm. back up.
That's great.
And I think that's been a really important thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Not being cutthroat.
Well, with outside competitors, it's a different story.
Okay, that's true. That's true. did your parents have a lot of influence over this? I mean, what did your parents do?
My dad is an entrepreneur. He's an OBGYN.
How's that an entrepreneur?
Well, because he went into the business of medicine.
Okay.
So we're actually multi-generation sort of working in women's-oriented businesses.
Okay. There you go. A little different type. Yeah.
Very different. But surprisingly, you know, some of that, just seeing how we, you know, operated in a women's field was, you know, mm-hmm. I think
it's kind of funny now, you both, you and your brother now work in a women's field.
Give some confidence to us about the possibility of doing that and being successful in it. But, and my mom was super mom.
Yeah.
She was just always sort of there.
Mine.
And yeah, I mean, look, I think the biggest thing from a parental perspective is just their just unquestioned support.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that you have that to fall back on, I think is, you know, it's more than a safety net. It's just knowing that, like, you know, things are going to work out, and you have that support system in place. I think that gives you just a real amazing sense of confidence as you're going out there and doing things, mm-hmm. that, like, a lot of people might be skeptical of.
Yeah. I think it can go either way. I mean, I think there's people that become successful because they have, like, super supportive parents that, you know, that tell them they can do anything. And I think there's people that don't have that support and just, like, they want to do it differently.
Yeah,
for their, like, next generation.
I
had the same type of parents as you did. They just told me I was awesome all the time, and I was like, "You're right, I can do anything."
Well, and I think I will say, you know, my parents were extremely supportive, but it's sort of in the more general sense, mm-hmm. right? The details are, you know, you don't always want to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah,
you know, for a long time, I don't think they really understood.
Yeah.
What we were doing.
They were like, so no law school?
Exactly.
You failed law school.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so
you're going to make a box of women's products? Yeah.
A lot of times I think they would have sort of recommended just a little bit more conservative paths and decisions. And I think, there's a healthy sense of skepticism, I think, at different times, but supportive in a broader sense of, you know, like, you know, there was even with the sort of questions, you know, ultimately, like, a, you know, we trust you and you mm-hmm. guys are smart, and we're proud of you, and you know, go and give it a shot.
Yeah. Well, parents always have to question it. My parents weren't like, when I was like, I'm going to be a comic, they weren't like, oh, totally, just do it. They were like, so as a hobby, right? And now they get it. Now they're like obsessed with it.
Exactly.
So it just, you have to, like, prove yourself. I mean, I guess it would be crazy for a parent to just be like, sure, go take this leap of faith and, like, maybe never have, like, health insurance or whatever.
But you know, it's a fine line to navigate, because I think people can get pretty easily dissuaded,
mm-hmm.
by even that type of questioning, which you should know that, like, there are going to be questions, and there are going to be, you know, and anything that you're doing that's even a
little
bit different.
Well, I think anyone, I mean, friends, family members, mentor, everyone's going to tell you that you probably shouldn't be doing a certain amount. I think to be successful as an entrepreneur, anyone doing something that's like out of the box, you have to sort of be not hindered by the word no. Like hearing the word no, like when someone tells me no, I'm just like, all right, that's your opinion.
Great, for you.
Opinion, just
going
to keep
doing
it. Yeah. I think that's pretty much the only way you can do it. I mean, definitely listen to criticism and stuff and like take it in, but I don't think there's any way to be successful in a unique field if someone tells you like, no, you can't really do that. And if you take that to heart, it's like, probably you shouldn't do it then.
Yeah. I mean, we've had so many, you know, naysayers along the way. And I think, I think underrated, and I think people don't trust actually just, I'm not even gonna say their instincts, just their own sort of analytical abilities enough. Mm-hmm. I think you want to solicit opinions, you want to talk to a lot of people, but then you also have to sort of say like, what's unique, and like, what's unique about this situation or my opportunity, because people do new things. Like the most amazing things are the new things, right? Mm-hmm. That's where so much of the excitement is, and people do create new businesses and new things, and you know, every generation thinks, oh, I wish I was alive 20 years earlier.
Yeah.
So then I could have invented, you know, the internet, or 20 years before that, the computers.
Anyone that thinks like, oh, it's so much better in another like scenario, or like someone has it luckier than me, is
I think there's a sense in which people think, you know, sort of the innovation is done, you know, in some ways. And I think that's a naive thing to think. I mean, we're in a really dynamic world.
But we're all going to just stop. This is it.
Yeah. No, there's an Amazon or a Google or a Facebook.
Well, those are not FabFitFun subscribers.
Yeah. There's exactly. Our, you know, we actually did some consumer insights work, and we actually labeled our subscribers the savvy self-starter.
Oh, I like
that's the sort of prototype of the
that's
member.
Cute.
And so they're definitely people who take initiative and believe in their ability, and they're, you know,
I gotta come up with that for my podcast listeners. Obviously they're savvy self-starters, but I gotta think of my own thing.
Well, we're happy to refer you to our
people. Do you know someone that can help me with some marketing?
You got it.
So how hard was it to build this business? Like, how many hours a day were you working? Like, did you just not sleep for years?
You don't count, because you might not be.
But do you look back on? Well, I mean, you're probably still doing it now. But do you look back on it, just like, how the hell did I get through that?
I've enjoyed the ride. I really have. I think you know, you make sacrifices along the way, but I think if you just enjoy what you're doing, then I think you don't really think about it that much. I think you're just sort of, we were having fun, and I've been very blessed in my whole life, and to be able to work with great people and to try to build something special. And
you were never like, I'm exhausted. Why would I do this?
You have bad days. You have good days. Yeah. I think that's just part of it. But, I'm not going to complain about my hours, because I think what ends up happening if you're an entrepreneur is there's just a complete blur between like what's your personal life and what's your professional life.
Is it hard to have a personal life when you work that much? Like, is it hard to like date or to like spend time with friends or family and stuff like that?
I thought we weren't going to get so personal on the podcast.
I ask all my people stuff like this.
Sorry,
I don't know you that well. I probably shouldn't ask you that, but you'll survive.
I'm
good at getting information out of people.
I'm single, and I think a lot of times I'll say I've sort of been married to my business. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some truth to that, which is starting a business, and especially like, you know, the beginning stages when you're just hyper growth mode.
Yeah.
There's a level of just attention that it requires and mind share that it requires that I think it's just hard. I mean, it's hard to do that and also start, you know, two marriages at once, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right. Shouldn't do that. And so, you know, I think actually a lot of entrepreneur friends that I know either met someone before, mm-hmm. or sort of once the sort of the ride cooled down a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that creates more of an opportunity.
So it's hard for you to have time for it, but it's okay because you committed to it.
Yeah. It's, I don't even know if it's just time. It's almost the mental space, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I get that with comedy and stuff. I mean, it's hard for comedians today. You're always on the road and stuff. It's like, I mean, I'm not on the road as much as a lot of other people, but I mean, I'd like to get to that level. But I mean, I have friends that are on the road every weekend. Like, I don't know how you would. I mean, it would be hard to have you'd have to have like a girlfriend or a boyfriend who's just like totally cool with just like, all right, I see them during the week, and then
I think, exactly. And there's tons of other, you know. Yeah, I mean, traveling, being nomadic, I think is really tough on relationships.
Yeah.
That adds a whole other dimension to it, too.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to ask you, like, fun stuff now. Not fun stuff, but, like, stuff about, like, the entertainment world, because we've talked enough about, like, tech stuff.
Cool. I just don't know much.
Well, that might make it funny. Do you have a favorite comedian besides me?
Rachel O'Brien.
Do you not have a favorite comedian?
I do.
You don't even know the name
of a
comedian?
I didn't say no. You just let me answer. Larry David is my favorite comedian.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah. Okay. I'm very excited
for him. Have you ever seen him live?
I have not seen him live.
Oh, my God. He's so funny. He's exactly what you would picture him to be like. He's fantastic.
I mean, he's epic.
Yeah. That's a
good
answer.
I'm very excited for this upcoming season of Curb. It's coming back to HBO.
Is it?
Yeah.
How long has it been off? I tend to not know things.
4 years?
Terrible. Okay. Cool. What's your favorite movie?
Inglourious Basterds.
Really?
Yes.
Seems intense. is that your favorite comedy?
it's really dark humor, I'd say.
Yeah.
But I laughed during it.
I like dark humor. I'm working on a script right now, and every page has something super inappropriate in it that I probably need to whittle down. So
can't wait to read it.
You should. Well, it's shit right now. I'm just trying to get it on paper before I go to Europe. I'm going to Europe, everyone. Hopefully, I know I have some of my listeners there because I posted about it on Instagram, but I might be doing comedy in Paris or maybe even Copenhagen, but most likely just Paris. But you guys should come. I think it will be, this will come out beforehand.
Does that ever work?
Yeah, all the time. Oh my God, all the time. All the time. My listeners are like my friends.
Your listeners are just going to show up in Copenhagen?
No, if they live there.
Okay.
No, those people that live there. Yeah, I already know that there's some, like, I posted on Instagram, like, oh, I'm going to Paris. And people were like, oh, you should go to this place. I'll be there. Blah, blah, blah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like I'm doing like the Reno Laugh Factory, at the end of May. And like, if I talk about it enough now, I'll make like enough people will hear about it that I'll get enough podcast listeners out there that come see the show.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really exciting.
Yeah.
You're worldwide.
I am.
Global.
Yeah. Reno, Nevada is.
We should call you Global Rachel O'Brien from now on.
Is that the marketing I'm looking for?
Rachel O'Brien worldwide.
Am I Pitbull? It sounds like something he would say. Doesn't he say
worldwide,
that?
Worldwide.
I swear he says that, right?
Something like that.
Well, I don't know. I don't know the rap world. Is that rap? I don't know. Yeah, so yeah, it does work if I talk about that on there. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to chat about? We've almost done a whole hour.
That was just one fun question. That's it?
Okay. Well, favorite comic. Okay. You like the fun stuff. Okay. I'll give you more. Most overused emoji.
I mean, by me, it's the 100 emoji.
Oh yeah, you do use that a lot.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like, it's on your shit. let's see. I'm thinking. Favorite food.
Are you gonna edit out those
No.
Favorite food.
I'm not doing like a CNN like newscast here. This is casual.
I'm
in sweatpants right now. This is not serious.
I'm going to become a listener of your podcast.
Are you? Are you just going to listen to your own podcast?
I just don't.
You're going to listen to this episode.
I don't know if this is way off tone or it's, you know.
Have you ever listened to a podcast?
I have, but not yours.
Okay. Well, you probably listen to like serious tech ones.
Yes.
Are you disappointed that I said
No, I'm happy you said
Because it's like relatable. I mean, these people are my friends.
Yes.
So I should be comfortable around them.
Friends.
Shut up.
Friends out there. Rachel is super comfortable right now.
I hate you. What the question did I just ask you that didn't answer?
You asked me my favorite food.
Yeah.
I have multiple. Spaghetti bolognese, gondi, which is like a Persian Friday night Shabbat sort of specialty.
What's in it?
It's like a, it's actually, you know, it's really trendy. It's like it's a bone broth at the base.
Yeah. What is that?
And then
all
like
about?
And then it has a matzo ball, but like out of meat. Usually a veal or
that sounds delicious.
It's incredible. It's really incredible.
Do Persians eat a lot of meat?
Yeah. Yeah. There's meats. I mean, there's a lot of variety in Persian cuisine, but, there's meat in most of it.
Do you know how to cook?
Poorly, but I have.
Well, you did order Postmates for your dinner, so
I did, but I have recorded my grandma and my mom
like
making
videotaped them.
Videoed some of them making some of my favorite Persian dishes. So,
and have you tried to make them yet?
I've not. I've just done step one.
Videotape it.
Exactly.
Step two is transcribe it.
No, step two is make it.
Is make it.
Yeah, it's a two-step process. No, three. Step three is eat it.
You did this like 10 years ago. You recorded this. You still haven't
actually
tried.
I recorded my grandma. Actually, maybe 5-6 years ago.
Really?
And then my mom, I did just a few weeks ago. Actually,
you should like edit this together and give it to your mom
or your friends.
Yeah. No, not this.
Podcast listeners.
No, not the podcast. I'm saying that you should give them like
the videos.
Yeah, that
no,
would
no,
be
I'm
so
saying,
nice.
But I'm saying we'll give it to your listeners
Yeah, if they want it.
If they want to make Gondi.
I mean, you're very confident in the fact that they might want it. This isn't FabFitFun. This is Rachel's podcast.
So they don't cook?
I don't know. Okay. I talk a lot about food.
Or they don't like good recipes. It's going to be good.
I think they do. I talk a lot about food. I don't think that you can
confident.
Be... You don't, what?
I feel good about it.
You should. Yeah. I don't think you can be one of my listeners and not like food. So, yeah. Well, I'll let you eat your food. We did like almost an hour. This is very good.
That's it?
Yeah. Do you just want to keep talking? What do you want to talk about? What do you feel like you didn't share?
I mean, we didn't talk politics, but that's no fun.
Yeah, I don't... Well, we can.
You know what? Actually, I have one thing I want to share.
Okay.
I'm going to share a coupon code for FabFitFun.
You don't get to do a free coupon code on my podcast. I get paid for these sponsors.
This one, I think is...
No.
You know what? We'll work out an affiliate deal later. If you don't...
You were almost just going to do a free...
No. I think we got to do this. Don't you want your members to try
a coupon
FabFitFun?
Code?
Yeah.
Fine.
Okay. We'll make it...
You were serious. All
right. We'll make it Rachel... What would you like the coupon code to be?
Bullshit. For what? Like, I can name it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because it's not going to air. This isn't live.
It'll air on Thursday.
Perfect.
Coupon code, what does it have to do with?
Whatever you want, your show. What's your show's?
Be Here. No,
Be Here. Okay, coupon code, Be Here.
No, we're not doing that.
B-E-H-E-R-E.
You don't get to use
my code. At
www.fabfitfun.com. That's my code for everything else. You don't get to use my code.
But you're going to love it. You will love it. Your listeners are gonna
No. Come up with something else that has nothing to do with me.
A different code?
Yeah.
You don't want a custom code?
No.
But you don't have to post about it.
Come up with something else.
Okay, fine. You know what? I ordered from Chin Chin. So we'll use coupon code Chin Chin.
There you go.
And that'll give you $10 off your first box.
You just gave them free ad space too.
That's fine.
You just did them a favor.
I spread the
We just did them a favor.
Absolutely. We have
Yeah.
So Chin Chin will get you 20% off your first box. We hope you give it a shot.
You sounded so professional. It sounded like a real commercial.
I've never really done an endorsement.
It wasn't bad.
On any form of media before. So.
Well, you seemed like a natural. You just forced it into my podcast.
Well, you've gotten a box, haven't you?
Yeah, I loved it. I really did. It was like, it felt like a very fun gift that I wasn't expecting.
Do you think your listeners would like it?
I think I'm sure that half of them know what it is.
Okay,
I think they would love it.
So we should share great things with your listeners.
We should share. You guys really should subscribe to FabFitFun and now you get 20% off.
There you go.
How much is it, the membership?
It's $49.99 per season.
Well, that's not very much.
No.
It's $200 a year.
Yeah. And if you prepay annually, you get a whole set of perks and stuff and a big discount.
What are the other perks?
So our annual membership, you get what's called FabFitFun Select,
mm-hmm.
where you get to customize the color and style of various products in your box.
Ooh.
You get early access to add-ons.
That's cool. What are the add-ons? Just extra stuff that you can put in it?
Exactly. You can add things to your box.
Do you ever pick out the products like all the way? You know, you said you have a product specialist person, but...
We have the most amazing merchandising team in the world, and... they're doing brand partnerships. They're doing product development.
But do you know what's in every box? You personally?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you actually know what it does, half of it?
No, not always. Stuff? I no? like the some of it, like it'll be like, such and such serum, mm-hmm. and I know a serum like goes on your
makes
face.
Makes you look
and,
younger. Yeah.
But no, but not just that, right? It can like make you look younger, or it can make you look brighter, or it can make you look.
Oh, you do know a little bit.
I mean, there's all these different things.
It's impressive.
So I'll know there's a serum, and I'll know it does something, but I won't always know the specific benefits of that one specific product.
Do you ever use any of the products on yourself?
Absolutely.
Do you have like a whole FabFitFun room in your house?
You know, over time, you know, maybe we'll do FabFitFun boxes for men as well. But even now, I think there's always, you know, maybe half the box that's obviously usable and maybe more.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to say?
Well, we can plug other brands that I like.
No, this is not how this works.
I think it's actually a great strategy. If you do it and it works, then they'll come back and sponsor your next podcast.
I don't need to do that. I'd rather them come to me. No one wants to hear me read a bunch of ads.
Okay, fair enough. It's not ads. It's things that your members will like.
Yeah, but...
You're like their guru.
I gave
you're
them
like their FabFitFun. Right?
I just gave them FabFitFun for you.
Okay, one at a time.
Yeah. I'll call this the FabFitFun podcast. It will be in the title.
Amazing, Rachel. Yeah. It's been a real pleasure being here with you.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Guys, thank you for listening.
Don't forget code CHINCHIN.
I'm going to stab you. what was I going to say? Oh, where am I doing shows? Well, I guess I canceled the one in LA. So, I don't know. Next one's coming up. Let's just say the Reno Laugh Factory. The most important thing. Me and Annabelle DeSisto of Adderall and Compliments have scheduled our first live podcast. I'm so excited. It's May 25th at the Hollywood Improv in the Lab. It is going to be the greatest time. We're going to have listener giveaways, some little contest things. I think Annabelle's giveaway is probably going to be like her crystal kit. I don't really have a product besides my love of alcohol, so my giveaway will probably be like you guys having a drink with me. It's going to be super fun. So May 25th at the Hollywood Improv in the Lab. Mark it down. I love you guys. Just email me, info@rachelobriancomedy.com. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Rachel N. O'Brien, RACHAELNOBRIEN. Do you want to give your social media handles?
Yeah, of course. I'm at Brukim. BROUKHIM.
Did you want to give a promo code for your Instagram?
I'm free to follow, actually.
You're free to follow?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.